Rare, medium, well done. Cooking meat is not a time to play guessing games. You can ruin the flavor of a tender piece of meat by overcooking. The best way to be sure the meat is cooked the way you like it is to use a meat thermometer. Before you place the meat in the oven, insert the thermometer so the bulb is in the center of the thickest part of the meat, making sure that it doesn't touch bone or fat. When the thermometer reaches a few degrees below the desired temperature, remove the meat from the oven and allow it to sit 15 to 30 minutes. It will continue to cook to the desired doneness and it'll be easier to carve. This is Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. To make sure you start with the best possible piece of meat for the way you're going to use it, write for more free information on meat buying. Write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
Graduation is a happy time, a time to think back over all the good work you've done. But it's also a time to consider your future. There's a bright future waiting for you as a member of the United States Air Force. The Air Force will give you valuable experience that just isn't available anywhere else, plus many other opportunities. So put your education to work. See your Air Force recruiter and look over the wide range of programs that are available to you right now. In the Air Force.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. I ask that unless it's something really, really urgent, let's hold off on the phone calls tonight because it's just me and trying to answer the phone and talk and log things and press buttons and do all the things that I have to do here. It's just too much for me to handle. I'm just a simple country DJ. Your modern machinery and buttons to press are strange and confusing to me. Chase Mullane is exploring the great American Northwest and will be back with us next week. On the Town will be here at 9 o'clock with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. YouTube has been in the news quite a bit lately, and there's been a lot of noise around demonetization. That is not demonization. We're not demonizing people. Demonization. Demonetization is when they take your money away. And that can be a big deal on YouTube if you are one of the people who is now making a living on YouTube. People like Tim Pool. And if you don't watch Tim Pool, as I've said, I think, on this show many times before, you should. Tim Pool is one of the smartest journalists and one of the smartest commentators working anywhere in any medium right now. Tim Pool is, if you like this show, if you like listening to me, you will enjoy Tim Pool most of the time. He gets things wrong occasionally. He gets a little worked up sometimes about things that I wouldn't necessarily get worked up about. But by and large, I find Tim Pool to be absolutely worth my time. I watched him every single day. But there are a whole ton of people out there making a living on YouTube. Obviously, PewDiePie is one that if you know anything about YouTube, you know who Felix is. You know that he is the number one guy on YouTube. Well, there's been this thing going on lately where activists, and this came to a head recently, where a former activist who now cavorts as a journalist, I guess is the best way to put it. A former activist who now plays journalist named Carlos Maza went after Steven Crowder. Steven Crowder is a Canadian comic who runs a YouTube channel, Louder with Crowder. Very popular, big audience. Carlos Maza works at Vox and has his own YouTube channel and gets a lot of views on his videos. So Crowder had been meanly, and it's fair to say meanly, making fun of Carlos Maza for a while. And so Carlos Maza basically wrote an article on Vox saying, why is YouTube still allowing this hate speech? And the next thing you know, Crowder is demonetized. And not just Crowder, but a whole ton of channels got demonetized. School teachers had their accounts suspended. Journalists had their accounts suspended. A channel that just showed a still image of weather was suspended because of Carlos Maza's activity. Because the hope of someone like Carlos Maza, who, by the way, began his career as an activist trying to get Fox News taken off the air. That was his first job, trying to get Fox News taken off the air. Now he's going after Steven Crowder. The goal of someone like Carlos Maza is to get Steven Crowder or PewDiePie or Logan Paul or whoever the target happens to be, Tim Pool, whoever the target has to be, demonetized. Because the hope is if you take the ad revenue away from people who make their living on YouTube, and by the way, you can make a lot of money on YouTube. It takes time and hard work, but you can do it. If you take the money away from them, you'll shut them up and they'll go away and you won't have to deal with them anymore. That is fascist. That is authoritarian. If you are trying to take somebody's living away from them because of what they say, or you are trying to take or you are trying to silence somebody by taking their money away from them, that's fascism. Plain and simple. Period. That's fascism. If you support that in any way, shape, or form, congratulations, you are a fascist. You may not have realized that you were a fascist until just now. But if you are Carlos Maza, or you are a Carlos Maza supporter, or you celebrate what Carlos Maza is doing, you are a fascist. Congratulations. Sometimes it's nice to know just who and what you are. Admitting that you have a problem is the first step in getting help. And a free society, a republic, has no place for fascism. Now, there's an interesting angle to this whole story. Tim Pool has been covering this extensively. And Tim Pool is, like a lot of these other content creators, in a very real sense, the agent of his own demise. And to understand what is really, because here's what's happening. Tim Pool and a lot of other content creators who are in political spaces basically see this as a tribal war. They see this as the left trying to silence the right. The right, by the way, doesn't do this. There is no conservative commentator. There is no right-wing activist calling up Vox and calling up Vox's advertisers and trying to get Carlos Maza silenced. This is something that happens exclusively from the left toward the right. And they inevitably couch this in hate speech. We talked about that with the New Zealand story before the break. Clearly hate speech. I have no problem with that guy going to jail. You're going to put crosshairs on the Christchurch shooting video and a kill count, that's hate speech. You go to jail. And we're talking about somebody discussing politics, discussing things that you may not personally agree with. Jordan Peterson saying, I refuse to respect the pronouns of trans people. That is the kind of speech that needs to be allowed to exist. You cannot have debate if you silence one side by labeling everything they say that you disagree with as hate speech. We cannot have debate if activists on the left are calling advertisers on these channels and saying, did you know you support hate speech? Because the advertisers are inevitably going to cave because corporations don't care. So what Tim Pool and Sargon of Akkad and a lot of other people have done is they have found other ways to make money. they have signed up for Patreon, or they have signed up for Minds.com or some other site that allows people to contribute to them in support of their work. So you go on Patreon, or Tim Pool has his timpool.com. I don't know what sources he's using right now. Patreon got hammered by the activists too, because they weren't satisfied just taking people's money away on YouTube. They had to get it off of Patreon as well. But you basically say, hey, I'll throw $5 a month at Tim Pool. I like what he does. And if enough people do that, then Tim Pool doesn't have to worry about his YouTube revenue. Doesn't care if he gets demonetized because he's making money elsewhere. So they've all done this. They all have these offsite ways of earning money. And this is how they have become the agents of their own demise. Because what they don't get is that this is not about left versus right. This is not about speech. This is not about someone saying something that someone else finds offensive and that person trying to get them thrown off of YouTube. To the people participating in this, it is. But what they don't understand, what they don't get, the step that they haven't taken. And if anybody here watches Tim Pool, knows Tim Pool, love the guy, the archive of the show is available, WMFO.org. Just go to schedule, click schedule. You can listen to the podcast. Share this with him, because I'm going to lay out right now what's really going on and where everybody is missing the thread on this. And to do this, I'm going to go back to an article that was published in January of 2018 in The Guardian, which from time to time is actually a good news source. YouTube small creators pay price of policy changes after Logan Paul scandal. YouTube changed Erin Armstrong's life. The transgender vlogger joined in 2006, posting videos about her transition and connecting with trans people across the globe, building a community that once seemed unimaginable to her. But last year, the Google-owned video platform started flagging some of her videos as unsuitable to advertisers, costing her much-needed revenue, and this week, the site emailed her even more hurtful news. Her channel is now considered too small to be eligible for ads, and under new rules, she will be kicked out of YouTube's partner program altogether. Quote, I'm done trying to make content that is going to fit these guidelines, and I'm done being nickel and dimed constantly, said Armstrong, a 33-year-old Oakland, California resident. They really cater to the people who have the money, the views, and the pull. And it's less about creating and supporting the small communities that come together and share their experiences. The new rules came just following YouTube's decision to allow the popular vlogger Logan Paul to continue to monetize his videos even after he broadcasted an apparent suicide victim's body. YouTube's reforms this week are meant to tighten restrictions on ads in the wake of the scandal. But some see a double standard and fear the new policies could further harm vloggers with smaller audiences and artists who seek ad revenue to support their work. Creators who discuss mental health, disability, and LGBT topics in particular have argued that YouTube is failing them while rewarding creators who produce offensive content. YouTube, which denies that its systems are biased, has been on the defense for months, accused of spreading misinformation, footage harmful to children, harassing content, and other damaging videos. Paul, a 22-year-old celebrity YouTuber with 15 million subscribers, apologized this month after millions watched his video showing a dead body. It took 10 days for YouTube to respond to the backlash about the video, which remained on the site until Paul took it down. The company announced last week that his channel would be removed from premium advertising program and that partnership projects were being placed on hold. But Paul, who is known for viral pranks, is still eligible to earn money through YouTube's general ad program. This is in contrast to vloggers who said it seemed that YouTube's system was automatically deeming them unsuitable to advertisers simply because of their identities and placing the burden on them to appeal their case. I'm going to stop right here, because if you know how to read this story, if you know the approach that I take and the way that I view things as a marketer, as someone in business, As a former Standard & Poor's employee, as somebody who considers the world of finance and all things, the answers are already here. When YouTube launched in 2005, It had to deal with a central problem. How do you get people to upload video to the web? Why is anybody going to do that? YouTube's answer was, we will pay you for it. We will let you upload your video, and we will run advertising against your video. And you will get 55% of the revenue that we get from those ad sales. So for every dollar that advertising money that comes in on your video, you get 55 cents and YouTube gets 45 cents. This was a critical mistake in YouTube's development and one that they are still living with today. PewDiePie, who is one of the top earners on YouTube, makes about $12 million a year. $12 million a year off of YouTube. YouTube's estimated revenue in 2015 was $8 billion. The average cost per view for YouTube is 4 cents. Almost 5 cents. And for advertisers, that's great because it's cheap. And I can tell you, as someone who has run ad campaigns on YouTube, you can spend money on YouTube as fast as you give it to them. You would not believe how much YouTube video people consume on a daily basis. So YouTube sets things up so that everybody's getting 55 cents and they're getting 45 cents. Logan Paul is one of the top earners. PewDiePie is one of the top earners, $12 million a year. I don't know how much Tim Pool is making or anybody else. YouTube made that decision when they were a privately held company. Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, interestingly, were both on the board of YouTube at that point in time. And it's the sort of thing that seems fair. You're not paying anything for your content, right? Everybody's just giving you that for free. And if they get enough viewers to actually get advertising on it, you have to build up your own audience on YouTube, okay? People love to bag on YouTubers. Let me tell you something. They work hard. The people who are actually making a living on YouTube work their butts off to do it. It is a lot of work to load 3 or 4 videos a day, which some people do. It is a lot of work to travel around the world and take a chance, you know, and pay for everything out of pocket yourself in the hope that somebody's going to want to watch your videos, which is what Logan Paul and his brother are in a whole different category right now where they're just dumb and rich. But PewDiePie puts a lot of effort into his videos, has all those followers for a reason, because the content is entertaining enough. Is it great? No. But he's getting 55 cents of every dollar that YouTube makes. So YouTube eventually becomes a wholly owned subsidiary of Google, which then becomes a wholly owned subsidiary of Alphabet. And this is where this gets interesting. In these culture wars, as Tim Pool and others define them, where Carlos Maza comes in and says, press the demonetize button, and someone comes in and presses the demonetize button, the only thing they're focused on is that someone's pressed the demonetize button. And the person who is pressing the demonetize button is a $12 to $15 an hour drone employee who's just sitting there saying, yeah, okay, boom, demonetized, whatever. That person did not create the demonetize button. And that is what matters. Someone created the ability to demonetize YouTube creators. And this article from The Guardian from 2018 gives you some insight into this. What did they do? They told smaller creators, you're too small. You're demonetized. Please go away. They told people who were building a following on controversial topics, we're not going to run advertising against you anymore. Go away. Advertisers don't want it. Is this because YouTube cares about the advertisers? No, it is not. Is it because YouTube cares about the creators? No, it is not. Someone way, way above your rank and file YouTube employees, someone way above people in the C-suite The executives at YouTube is making these decisions. The board of directors created the demonetize button. And they did it for one simple reason. YouTube pays its creators 55 cents on the dollar. Wall Street does not like that. Now, Google does not release any of its financials regarding YouTube. They won't tell us how much advertising money they made. They won't tell us how much money they paid out. But I will tell you, as someone who has followed Wall Street closely for decades and understands the way that venture capitalists think and Wall Street investment firms think, that if you have a company like YouTube that is making billions of dollars, okay, $8 billion in 2015, and then handing out $4.5 billion to content creators, you have a problem. Because Wall Street is sitting there and saying, why are you paying people for this? The other problem that YouTube has is there is so much video being uploaded constantly that 4 cent per view, average cost per view, is not nearly as much as it could be. It's one of the cheapest forms of advertising out there. We're talking pennies a view. You can't get that anyplace else. Advertisers love it because we can go in and we can buy lots and lots and lots and lots of YouTube. YouTube doesn't like it because if that average cost per view was a dollar, they wouldn't be making $8 billion a year. They'd be making 40, 400. What's 8 times, what's a 20% increase on that? 24, yeah, it's about $40 billion in revenue. If you could get the cost per view up, or you could be making more money for your shareholders if you stop paying your creators. That is what this is about. And this is what Tim Pool misses. And granted, Tim Pool doesn't miss much, okay? But when you're close to it and you're in the middle of it, you're going to see it a certain way. Anyone who covers certain types of news will tell you that it eventually infects your thinking and that you start seeing the world from this certain perspective that is heavily, heavily influenced by what you've been writing about and what you've been following and what you've been reading. Because nobody can get every possible point of view. That's when it's good to have somebody on the outside. This is what editors are for in a newsroom, by the way, is editors are not supposed to be that close to anything. In the YouTube model, where Tim Pool is writer, editor, producer, commentator, if you're in the middle of the culture war, you're going to see everything through the lens of the culture war. And Tim Pool covers it well. Tim's a smart guy. I'm not accusing him of being narrow-minded. I'm saying you get blinders on because you have to have blinders on. And what Tim Pool doesn't understand in this case is that you want to know who built the demonetization button, not who's pressing it or why. You want to know why it exists. Why it exists is because 55% of YouTube's ad revenue goes to the creators. Some of that is necessary. YouTube has to pay creators, or they would leave and they would take their audience with them, and then the views go down. And the ad revenue goes down even further. So you need PewDiePie. You need to give PewDiePie $12 million a year. But if you're making $8 billion, you have no problem giving PewDiePie $12 million a year. That's a drop in the bucket. How many PewDiePies can you support? How many up-and-coming content creators who are increasingly getting bigger audiences and more monetization can you support? How many Tim Pools and Sargon of Akkad's? How many Black Pigeon Speaks? How many Mr. Obvious? How many people? Even some of these guys making Pokemon videos. How many Jim Sterlings? How many of these people can you support before Wall Street is going to come in and say, enough is enough? You are going to cut your revenue share. You are going to cut it to 90-10. They're going to get 10%, you're going to get 90%, or we are going to pummel your stock into oblivion. We will destroy you. Because that is all Wall Street wants to see. Wall Street wants to see profit. And when you are paying 55% of your revenue to your content creators, that is a big obstacle to profit. If YouTube had a 40-60 split the other way, they kept 60% and the creators got 40%, we might be having a different conversation here. But the revenue split favors the creators. Because of that, YouTube is trying to find a way to stop paying creators. So when Carlos Maza comes along and cries hate speech and gets Steven Crowder demonetized along with dozens of other channels, that's exactly what the board of directors want. That's what Wall Street wants. And when Tim Pool and all these other creators go off and find another way of monetizing their YouTube channels off of YouTube, that's what the board of directors want. That's what Wall Street wants. Because YouTube will be more than happy to have you post, probably, as long as it's not illegal, any kind of speech at all. You want to make fun of people, you want to use homophobic, or you want to use gayist slurs, you want to use racial language, go for it. As long as you're not monetizing it, as long as we're not paying you for it, we don't care. We're not going to run ads against it, but you don't care, we don't care. You're making your money off Patreon. You're making your money off of some third-party site that people subscribe to support you. We are ultimately getting what we want, which is an end to the 55% payout to our content creators. This is how these people think. Now, I cannot prove any of this. I can't tell you specifically that a document exists saying we have to do this. And the people on the board of directors would actually be kind of dumb if they created a document that said any of this. But I will guarantee you that this conversation has been had at the board of directors level. And someone at some point between 2016 and 2018, either from Alphabet or from YouTube or from one of the big venture capital firms or one of the big Wall Street firms, said, look, this YouTube payout is not working for us. You need to stop giving more than half of your income to these content creators, or your stock is going to be worthless. And that is who YouTube is ultimately beholden to. Not its advertisers, not its creators, not its viewers. And the fact that everybody sits around and says, oh, this is the culture war, this is demonetization, this is an attack, this is a tactic, allows the real bad guys, the people who are trying to get rid of that 55-45 revenue share, to sit back and not have to take any heat at all. But that is exactly where the heat should be going. You shouldn't be upset at Carlos Maza. You shouldn't be upset at anybody who's out there trying to demonetize someone for anything other than the fact that they were a fascist. That's a good reason to be angry at somebody. You should be angry at fascists. Fascists are bad people. We don't want them in our republic. But you shouldn't be angry at them for doing what they do in their fascist ways, because that's who they are. You should be angry at a platform that allows that person to come in and say, hey, push the demonetization button. And they do. Because the demonetization button exists. And that's where the real anger should go. To whoever created the demonetization button. Whoever said, this is good policy. They didn't do it. Because they give two hoots about the content on YouTube. They don't care. They need the content to make money, and they don't care what the content is. They need happy advertisers, but they can buffalo the advertisers 50 different ways. And advertisers, ultimately, are not going to step away from the most visible platform online today. Johnson & Johnson will make a lot of noise about, well, somebody said something anti-LGBT, so we're taking down all of our ads for Pride Month. Good on you. You'll be back on July 1st. YouTube knows it. Johnson & Johnson knows it. Everybody knows it. The real issue is that 55% payout. And the fact that Wall Street does not like that. And because Wall Street doesn't like it, the board of directors doesn't like it. And this is what allows Carlos Maza to succeed. So you can be mad at Carlos Maza, but you're not angry at the right source of the problem. You're angry at a symptom of a larger disease, which is Wall Street control over all of these platforms. Because let's remember, none of them are privately held anymore. They are all public companies, and they are all looking to maximize their profits to keep their Wall Street overlords happy. And this brings me to my second topic involving YouTube tonight, which affects you. Would you believe if I told you that YouTube won a Peabody Award in 2008? For those of you who don't know, the Peabody is one of the most prestigious awards that you can win. It is the Nobel Prize of entertainment. Emmys are the blue ribbon you get at the county fair for best in show. The Peabody is the Nobel Prize. The Peabody says, the Emmy says, you made a good show. Nice job. You made a good show, or you gave a good performance, or you wrote a good script, or what have you. The Peabody says, not only did you make a good show, you made something of lasting cultural, educational, and historical significance. You made something worthy of the Library of Congress and the Smithsonian Institution. People in the show business will fall all over themselves to get Emmys. But what they really want are Peabody's. Because Peabody's give you a level of prestige way up above and beyond what an Emmy will ever give you. Okay? You can win an Emmy for The Bachelorette. You're never going to win a Peabody Award for The Bachelorette. 2008, YouTube, LLC, was given a Peabody Award. And the Peabody Awards wrote up a little, you know, like two-sentence description for everybody who got a Peabody that year. And this is what they said about YouTube. The video sharing website, a, quote, speaker's corner, end quote, where internet users can upload, view, and share clips, is an ever-expanding archive cum bulletin board that both embodies and promotes democracy. This is what the Peabody Committee said about YouTube in 2008. Both embodies and promotes democracy. I think it's fair to say that it's not doing that anymore. Not when people are being kicked off of YouTube left and right and demonetized left and right. I don't count Alex Jones in this, by the way. I will not defend Alex Jones because Alex Jones was asked nicely to stop doing what he was doing, to stop saying that Newtown was a false flag and all the rest of this nonsense. And because it was not on brand for Alex Jones to back down, he did not back down. And he accepted the consequences of what he did. That's a dumb move. This is why I don't like personal branding. That's a story for another day. 2008, YouTube. Both embodies and promotes democracy. And they got a Peabody Award. Not going to happen in 2019. 11 years later, everything has fallen apart. I will remind you of the First Amendment. This is the text of the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The most important part of the First Amendment for this conversation is abridging, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, which means your government cannot tell you what you can and cannot say. Your government cannot stop you from saying anything. Your government cannot compel you to say anything, although that piece of it is up for some debate right now. At the time that the Founding Fathers wrote these words, which are the very core and foundation of the liberties we enjoy in this republic, there were three ways of communicating with people. You could go to the public square, stand on a soapbox, and yell. Build an audience and start your movement. You could, if you were wealthy, own a newspaper and publish your views and try and rally people to your cause. If you were less wealthy, but had some means or had some supporters, you could hire a printer such as Benjamin Franklin, to make a pamphlet, and you could distribute that pamphlet to people. Those were the three methods of communication that existed. There was no phone, there was no television, there was no radio. That's it. You go scream on a soapbox, you hand people a pamphlet, or you get them to get the newspaper delivered every day. One of those three. That was as much as the founding fathers could conceive. And they said very clearly, we will have no jurisdiction over this at all. And that rule, by the way, persists to this day. I attempted to get a small business loan for a newspaper that I was running several years ago through a small business, through an SBA program, and was informed in no uncertain terms that the SBA cannot, the Small Business Administration, cannot in any way, shape, or form give loans to publishers, because that would be a government endorsement. So the government can't have anything to do with newspapers. Government can't stop you from printing your pamphlets and leaving them around, or your flyers. And the government can do nothing about what you say on your soapbox in the public square. Private industry can. And private individuals can. If you walk into my house and you start saying, I hate gay people, you are going to be told to leave. If you walk into my house and express any form of hate to anybody, you're going to be asked to leave immediately. Because I don't have time for that. No one wants to hear it. If you go into your office and start using the copy machine to print flyers for Stormfront, you can reasonably expect that your employer is going to fire you. And they have a right to do that. Because when you are in my house, when you are in your place of business, that government protection for freedom of speech does not apply. Private individuals and corporations are allowed to control what is said within their premises. So what happens when the public square is owned by a private company? This is where we're at right now. Because the public square is no longer standing on a soapbox and yelling. Pamphlets aren't going to get you anywhere. Even the government doesn't print pamphlets anymore. Flyers on a lamppost are not going to work. The newspapers are all dying. They might be happy to have you come in and contribute some content to them, because especially if you tell them you're not going to make them pay you for it, because some of them are happy just to have something to print, but they're losing their relevance. Even television, cable news, is failing. CNN has lost a third of its primetime audience. MSNBC has lost half because they spent 2 years chasing the Russia story and it didn't pan out for them. Again, on brand. We'll talk about personal branding someday. I hate it. What we have left is Facebook. What we have left is YouTube. That is the public square now. And our Constitution is not designed to cope with a public square that is privately owned. We did, however, make an attempt. Communications Decency Act of 1996 was largely thrown out by the Supreme Court for various things dealing with carriage rules and so on and so forth. But there was a section of it that was preserved that is still in effect today, called Section 230. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act says this: no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. This was the rule that allowed YouTube and Facebook and everyone else to flourish without the fear of lawsuit. Because it said, if you run the platform and you're not a publisher, you're not responsible for what users post. And thus began 2 decades of new tech platforms coming up, whether it's MySpace or Twitter or Instagram or AOL or Facebook or YouTube or whatever it is, all saying, we're hands off. People can come and post whatever you want. We are not a publisher. We have a terms of service that prevents you from publishing things that are patently illegal. You can't post bomb-making instructions on YouTube. You can't post illegal pornography on YouTube. And that's as it should be. And we all agree with that. We don't have a problem with that. What's happened lately, now that YouTube is in the demonetization business because they want to satisfy Wall Street, is that they have started removing channels. And they have started demonetizing their creators, which is the same thing as removing the channel. Because if Tim Pool loses all of his revenue and has to go get a day job, he's not going to be making videos anymore. This is the goal of the activists, by the way. For whatever reason, and I think both sides distort the extent of what's going on, but for whatever reason, this seems to impact people on the right more than the left. And as I said earlier, this sort of attack method of I'm going to call your advertisers and tell them to stop advertising, and I'm going to write articles and talk about how your content is all hate speech. This comes from the left and is aimed at the right. It never comes from the right and is aimed at the left. Conservatives don't do it. I don't know why they don't do it. It's working. They should do it. YouTube has a vested interest in cutting off payments to as many of its creators as it possibly can. But if it is true, as some would have you believe, that YouTube is removing content from one side of the political spectrum and not the other, that would make them a publisher. That would mean that they are enacting editorial control over what is said in the public square. As a private company, they have the right to do that under our Constitution. As freedom-loving citizens of a republic, that should horrify and terrify us, because it means, ultimately, left to its own ends, only one point of view would ever be represented on YouTube. And that would become the default view of the people of the United States. Because the most important aspect of the First Amendment is that it provides equal access to the public square. Because the government can't tell you what you can't say, everybody can walk in and say whatever they want. Unfortunately, it means we have to listen to white supremacists. And it means we have to listen to gaysists. And it means we have to listen to people who think socialism is a good form of government. But it also means that we get to listen to people who have different ideas. It means that when gay Americans feel persecuted in 1969, they can gather in parks around the city of New York and demand their rights. It means that they can have a parade that we still observe 50 years later as a triumph and a victory for civil rights in our country, fought by individuals taking full advantage of the protections the Constitution gave them. Now, just imagine if conservatives had control over YouTube back in the day and said, nope, no gay content, none at all, can't put it out here. Where does that community go? Where else can you go to organize? Where else can you go to be seen? There is no alternative. YouTube is the default public square, and it is now privately controlled. And because it's privately controlled, they get to decide what's said. You cannot have a republic where your public square does not allow all points of view. It will fail. It will either collapse into authoritarianism and totalitarianism, or it will melt down into civil war. Eventually, one of those two realities comes to pass. History tells us this. So one of two things needs to happen with YouTube. Either YouTube needs to be broken up in such a way that there is competition, or the federal government needs to go in and tell YouTube, in no uncertain terms, that you cannot police for content. You have to narrowly define what hate speech is. You have to narrowly define what is and isn't acceptable under the terms of service. And everyone has to live with that. I think the former is what's going to happen. I think the federal government is going to come in and break these companies up. And that is not going to solve the problem, because there won't be a single public square left at the end of that. There will be another bunch of fragmented channels where like-minded people gather to engage in groupthink and to avoid the opinions of the other side. and we will get that much more isolated from one another and that much more divided. This is really what the government needs to focus on, is finding ways to bridge those gaps and end those divides, rather than simply doing what we've done in the past and breaking up big tech companies. It won't work. The best solution we can hope for here is for the government to come in and say, listen, YouTube, these are your rules. You will operate and abide by these rules, or in an extraordinary move for the benefit of the public interest, we will take you over. 855-915-9636. We will run YouTube the same way that we run PBS. We will run it in the public interest. It is WMFO Medford on the Tell Mikey D. We'll be here in 12 and a half minutes. Before that, the strangest things of the past week and my favorite thing from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive All shelter today.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture with you for another 6 minutes. And then on the talent, Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. Call it up, make requests. They love it when you call in and request local music. Time now for What's Hot, favorite thing from the past week or the coming week. As you may know, summer is going to start on Friday. These are the longest days of the year, and before long, it'll start getting dark and cold again, so hang on, it's coming. But to celebrate summer, which is a good thing to do, because summer is nice, the Dairy Queen folks are going to be giving away a free small ice cream cone on Friday. All you have to do is download the Dairy Queen app. I usually don't like to do these things where like, oh yeah, you got to download the app. You can download the app for this one because it's free ice cream. Download the app. The app is free. Go to Dairy Queen on Friday. You will get a coupon. I believe it is a free small ice cream cone with purchase. But the cool thing is you can get the ice cream cone dipped in either chocolate or orange dreamsicle flavor. So that's a nice deal. Start summer with a free ice cream cone. Soft serve dipped in chocolate from Dairy Queen. They're near you. And there are none near that mess that's going to be over in Everett. So you don't have to go anywhere near that Everett thing to go get one of those. Check it out. Free ice cream at Dairy Queen. Download the app this Friday. Where's your head at? And that's a thing that happened. The strangest story of the past week. Florida. Where else but Florida? One man's reign of terror over neighborhood pools has come to an end. Police in Palm Bay had fielded dozens of calls from homeowners who reported that their inflatable pool floats had been stolen. Then an officer saw 35-year-old Christopher Monin riding his bicycle at 1:30 in the morning while carrying a white garbage bag. The officer stopped Monin, who said his bag was full of deflated pool floats. Monin later took police to a vacant house across the street from his home, where police discovered around 75 pool floats, including one shaped like a piece of bacon, a duck, and a Shaquille O'Neal lounger. As for motive, Monin told police he used the pool floats for sexual gratification. Even the Shaq lounger. Don't expect the homeowners to want these back when they're released from evidence. Pool floats. Florida. There you go. Hey, that is just about all the time that we have this week. As I mentioned, Shay Spillane is out exploring the Great American Northwest, so she will be back next week to tell us about that and get us caught up on everything that's going on. We are going to miss July 14th, somewhere around there, because I will have a rehearsal that night. My dear wife and I are going to be joining Voices of Hope to sing the national anthem at Fenway Park. for a, I believe it is a Thursday night game. We have rehearsal the night before. So we'll be missing one more show this summer, and then we're with you all the rest of the way. Some things to look forward to. We are going to be talking about the best places to go get ice cream because it is summer, and all the roadside ice cream stands are open. And I don't think we've done this one in a couple of years. Sort of a little bonus what's hot in here. If you find yourself in the vicinity of Lake Quanapowhat in Wakefield, take a little bit of a walk up Main Street, get into the center of Main Street, where you will find the Colonial Spa, which has been there, by the way, for decades. You walk into the Colonial Spa, and it is a the interior of the place has been restored more or less to its original condition. So it is a throwback to the kind of mainstream ice cream parlor that existed in the pre- and post-war years. And this one actually goes back to the pre-World War II years. The kind of place that you see in old movies where, you know, high school sweethearts would go for a milkshake. Parents would take their kids for an ice cream cone. They still have the counter sitting there, so you can sit down and enjoy your ice cream. They have dozens of flavors of both soft serve and hard serve ice cream. The thing that I'm going to recommend that you try is the fudge frap, which is it's a frap. You know, it's a milkshake, but it is made with hot fudge, and I don't know how they do it, but you can really, really taste the fudge. So if you find yourself in that area, worth a trip. Another place you might want to check out, if you find yourself north of the city, which you should, because you're staying away from Everett and Sullivan Square and everything around 93, 99, and that rotary this weekend, Putnam Pantry, which is still, all these decades later, sitting up there at the upper end of Route 128, or at the upper end of Route 1, near that rotary, and offering their famous ice cream smorgasbord. You go in, you get a couple of scoops of ice cream in a cup. You decide what toppings you want and how many of them you want. Kids love it, and adults love it too. So that is a couple of things that you can do this weekend. It is going to be gorgeous out. Go take advantage of it, because we know, or at least we expect, that once July rolls around, the heat and the humidity and the unpleasantness is going to settle in, and all you're going to want to do is sit in a nice air-conditioned room and forget about what is going on outside. So, there's some things to do this weekend other than going anywhere near Sullivan Square. Stay out of Sullivan Square this weekend. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. That's all the time we have for this week on the Tell Mikey D, coming up right now. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.